Welcome to the Alt Review Podcast, ladies and gentlemen. It is episode 23. We had that wrong a couple weeks ago, but I had to edit it out because I'm a ninja. Joining me, as always, from Corpus Christi, Texas, Michael, what is up?
By the hoary host of Hogoff!
What? Dude, I don't even... Okay. That's your thing. It's whatever. I don't ever know what's coming from you, and sometimes I don't want to know what's coming from you, so...
That was a little Marvel reference.
Alright. It's... You do you, man. I don't... Sometimes with you, son. Dude! 23 episodes. Who do we got on the line?
I'm so pumped right now. We have a band that I've had the pleasure to see live. We have Brian Montoya, the lead singer of Lion Throne, a band from San Antonio. Brian, how you doing tonight?
Man, I'm feeling fantastic. It's good to be here with you, Michael.
Glad to have you, brother. So we just have a couple questions to go through with you. Like I said, super stoked to have you. And so I'll let Greg take it away with the questions.
Brian, first question we got for you is tell us about your musical background, sir.
Musical background for me, man. My dad played guitar, so there was, you know, a guitar around the house. And naturally, being somewhat mischievous, I wanted to find a way to make as much noise with it as possible. So the blues really is where I kind of got my real background, man. My first love, if you will, for the guitar.
I like it. I like the mischief aspect of that. That is.
Yeah, I was a bit of a troublemaker, man. I was always tuning my dad's guitar like wrong because I didn't know how to play it. You know, I just wanted to make some sounds. So he'd come home and the thing was all screwed up. But you know, I was getting my fix, and eventually started playing it in standard tuning, much to his delight.
I dig it. Brian, can you tell us a little bit about the writing, recording, and promotion process for your new singles that you have out, Throat, Snake Charmer, Fly, and Go by Three?
Absolutely. Those four songs comprise what we're now calling the Year of the Lions EP. That was, the recording process and all that was actually kind of a slam bang operation. We recorded with our friends Kingdom Sounds in Austin, Texas. Thanks John Ray and Barbara Higginbotham that run and own that place. Absolutely wonderful studio to record in. Super top notch. All the vintage equipment you could want, et cetera, et cetera. So that it was our second time back with them. So it was a very cozy environment for us. They were super hospitable and we were able to actually do all of the tracking for these four songs in one day. We got set up and literally knocked out all the drums, bass, guitar, everything, you know, just we're really filling in our elements. So the recording of this was all very organic. There's a lot of actual one takes on this EP that were just the one the first time because we were feeling so cozy, you know, and in our element. Mixed and mastered by our friend Adam Gibbs at Space Studios in Austin, Texas, who was also our second time working with him. And they're just an incredible team. We love the way this thing sounds. So that part, that was all super simple, thank goodness. A lot of time that's a big snag for band. The writing process, a lot of these songs, Go By Three, for example, was an acoustic song that I had wrote years and years ago and just sort of introduced to the guys, you know, in a jam session. And that is how a lot of our writing happens. We'll sort of kick ideas around and spontaneously arrive on something, you know. And then with a backbone of the foundation of a song already laid, the music comes together super organically and really quite quickly. So our writing process is a very organic thing.
With all that being said, Brian, I live in Columbus, Ohio, and Michael has raved about your guys' live show. For a guy like me who's not seen you live, tell me what I need to know about a live Lion Throne show.
Ultimately, I think the thing that that you really take away is that it was an experience that you actually will find yourself getting lost in the, I guess, the vibe of the whole thing with us is something that I hear back from people a lot. Yes, we have a very high energy show. You know, we get very into our things and we we perform on our stage quite well. But ultimately, I think what people really find loving about it is that it's you sort of disappear with us into our little vibe. You know, it's none of what we do is rehearsed per se. You know, there is a show element, but it's not like I need to be standing on the taped X on the stage at such and such time so the smoke goes off right, or that kind of experience. You know, it's what's going to happen is going to happen, and you're in it with us while we're up there on stage, because that's really an outlet for us. You know, it's something that we do because that we need to do this. You know, we've been doing this our entire lives, and I feel like that passion that we bring to our performances is ultimately what people can relate to the most.
I love that too, because I mean, that's what I look for when I go to a show, is bring me in, take me with you. Is, you know, I don't,
when I'm absolutely
going,
man,
when I'm going, I don't want to be there. I want to be wherever you are.
Exactly right. You know, we all bought the ticket and we're all in the venue, but we're trying to go other places, you know. And we find often that we are able to connect with our audiences that way, and it's there's nothing else like that, man, to feel that sort of energy and share that energy with an audience is truly special.
Brian, kind of related to that, what's one thing for maybe someone who hasn't heard your music at all, what's one thing that you want people to know about your music?
You know, I want people to know that it's super relatable. All of our music is inspired from our lives. You know, we like to embellish a little. We are storytellers, but this all is real life stuff for us. You know, it's relationships that we've been through, ups and downs, that kind of thing. And we really, as far as enveloping people in the story of us, you know, it's really all about growth for us, and not just as a band, but personally, you know, as kind of striving to be the better you that you can be. So a lot of our music is, I wouldn't call it inspirational, but you will find yourself inspired, I think, if you follow us on this journey of ours, because it's a personal growth thing for us as well, as I mentioned. So that's tying into the live show, you know, that's that kind of vibe that people find themselves in. It's a very genuine place for us, because this is how we grow and how we kind of reach that better us personally.
That was a great answer.
Thanks, man. It was off the cuff.
All right, this next question we ask, it's kind of a stumper, but we don't mean it to be.
All right, I'm ready.
What we're trying to grab from you is your influences to get you to this point. So with that being said, if you're putting together a show, you're going to play on a show, five or six bands other than you, who's playing with you?
Oh, man, the impossible question, huh? Okay. Well, I would have to say recently I've been very inspired by The Movement. They're a reggae band that I actually kind of slept on until recently, and stumbled on their most recent album, Golden, which I believe is number one on the reggae charts for a little while. Regardless, it's just an incredible album, and I kind of then discovered all of their, you know, discography and everything. So they're super talented performers and writers, and I'm feeling very inspired, like I said, currently by them. So I would love to be able to perform with those guys. Rage Against the Machine, I feel like, has always been a huge inspiration to, you know, their originality. That was just like awe-inspiring for me. You know, I remember when Evil Empire came out, and I went and paid like $20-something for it at Sam Goody, you know, and that was like the holy grail of what I'd ever heard anybody do with a guitar before. So that they would have to be on the bill, you know. I feel like, even though it may be a little cliche at this point, Incubus has also been another one that has been a huge inspiration for us, for me personally as a singer and songwriter. Who doesn't want to be able to sing like Brandon Boyd, you know? So I guess them. And if we're going, you know, full on like dream setup, let's bring back Jimi Hendrix. You know, if we could do that, that would be rad. Just so I could say that I did it. and man, I have to pick another one. Let's see. Man, that's a tough one. I'd have to go with another all-time favorite, and, you know, rest his soul, of course. But any project that Chris Cornell was involved in, I was able to see Soundgarden in Virginia. They were co-headlining with Nine Inch Nails a few years ago. And it was just incredible, man, for me. So I grew up listening to them and never had the opportunity to catch Soundgarden, of course. And so seeing that live and watching them crush it, you know, 20-something years later, was impressive for me. So, yeah, maybe that right there, man. That might be my dream lineup, if you will.
That is one hell of a lineup.
That's probably... yeah. That's probably one of the best answers for that question that I've heard. That's, yeah. Like, that touches a nerve for me personally, musically. I'm like, I a lot of times I'm like, yeah, I'd go to that show, but like this time, like, yeah, take my money. I would go to that
all
show.
Of it. Take
right.
it all.
Well, I gotta do sell the car. I'll sell the car. Let's go.
Like, yeah, my wife would be mad at me. I'm like, max out the credit card more.
Right. It's already maxed out. We'll call them and see if you can up the limit.
Yeah, I need some help.
Wow, fantastic. Brian, do you have any upcoming projects or shows that you want people to know about?
We do have some shows coming up locally here in San Antonio for us this Friday, the 12th. We're playing a very small, kind of intimate gig at a place called Booze Hounds for our San Antonio friends. Also, May 4th. We will be playing at the very first Summer Night Showcase at Rebecca Creek Distillery. It's their first of the year. It's actually really just beautiful area that they've got a nice stage set up out there. So we're really looking forward to those local shows for us down the line this year. And what people can expect is we're going to have a presence once again in Denver like we did last year. This time probably focused mostly in Denver. And reconnect with some friends of ours. Float Like a Buffalo is one of the bands that we made some really great friends with in the Denver area, and we're looking forward to doing some performances with them this year. And also, this will be our first time we're planning a trip out to California this year as well in the winter, so we'll be making some Southern California friends later on in the year. So we definitely have some big moves coming up, and we're excited to make some new friends in all of these places that we visit.
That's fantastic. I love to hear that y'all are branching out, you know, outside of Texas, getting some more exposure in California and Colorado. That's awesome to hear.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Oh, also, almost slipped my mind, but we are planning a week-long Texas tour. We didn't forget about Texas. That'll be coming up June, likely the end of June, with some dates to be announced here soon. But that will be likely a 6 or 7 day thing purely in Texas. In June, yeah. For us.
All right, Texas in June. I think I can handle the heat, Michael.
I don't know, dude. I don't know if you know. It's like that level in Mario where the sun tries to kill you.
It is like that. He's not kidding, man.
Listen, I got put for a construction company I worked for. I got put on the roof of a building in Phoenix one time.
Okay, that's comparable.
I'm not even joking. Yeah, the guy turns around and looks at me and goes, "It's a dry heat." I'm like, "It's 128 degrees. I don't care if it's wet heat, dry heat. It's 128 degrees.
Yeah, it's just hot.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Period.
All right, Brian, one last question before we let you go. As we wrap up our show tonight, we will play your song Snake Charmer in its entirety. Tell me a little bit about that track.
Sweet. Snake Charmer is actually a very deeply personal track for me. That came about, so Lionthrone has been together just over a year now. One of our first big deals we did was South by Southwest unofficial performances last year. We had, I think, 8 or 9 of them. While I was staying in the trailer we were in, I had this, what you could describe as a come to Jesus moment, if you will. You know, I had a very real connective moment where I sort of realigned my purpose, or rather reconfirmed my purpose and what I was doing with these boys in Lionthrone and getting this group together. Ultimately, the song is drawn from a place where that a lot of people can relate to it, when feeling like you've either failed at something, or that you've reached the brink of failure, or that you can simply no longer carry on to do what it is that you either need to do or desire to do, and summoning the strength really from within to kind of rush headlong into this unknown, this unknown deep that a lot of people sort of find ourselves in. You know, it's ultimately, it's about pulling yourself up by the bootstraps, if you will, and becoming what the song goes on to say, of course, that you yourself become the sort of snake charmer, that you've got a grasp on this thing that was either holding you back or holding you down, and you now see yourself in the position of power. So it's sort of about, being at that edge of losing yourself and collecting your will and seeing that doesn't happen.
I love that message, Brian. I love it. It sounds fantastic, and I'm excited for people to hear it. As we wrap up, I just want to say again, I'm really excited. Brian knows the night that we first met, I was so excited after I heard their stuff. Him and I were just talking so excitedly together about all the potential collaborations and things. And so I'm just so excited we got to have you on tonight. I'm really hoping that people go and check out Lion Throne. Their stuff is fantastic. If you want to hear something that has a, flair of reggae, a flair of funk, some nice, and a flair of rock too. It's got a lot going on, in a good way, and absolutely you will not be let down by Lion Throne. So thank you again, Brian. I really appreciate you coming on.
Michael, Greg, thank you guys so much for having me today. It's been great.
All right. Thank you very much again. Listening to this show, do not forget, once Mike and I shut our big fat mouths, stick around for the song Snake Charmer in its entirety. You don't want to miss it. I cheated. I listened to it already, and it is a badass tune.
I cheated too. It's a straight up banger.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
All right. You have a good night, Brian. Thanks.
Okay, fellas. Cheers.
Cheers. Take care.
There you go. Brian Montoya from Lion Throne, right here on the Alt Review podcast.
Dude, they are so good. I can't stress it enough. If you're in Texas in June and they're doing that Texas tour, I beg you, go see them live. They are
implore
amazing.
You.
Right. I don't know what other word I can use. Go do it. Like,
listen,
whatever you're,
he's got
future,
that maniacal look. Folks, he's going to duct tape you and take you to the show.
Right. Like, whatever you're thinking about doing on that night, don't do it. If it's your anniversary, go to the show. I don't care what it is.
If it's your birthday, go to the show.
Right. If you're, I don't know.
If it's your mom's birthday, take your
take
mom
her to
the show.
Yeah. Right. Right. I don't care what it is.
He ain't joking. He got them crazy eyes.
I do, because I'm telling you, when him and I first started talking, I was like, dude, you guys are going to, like, this is another band that I said before when I first met them. I was like, I got to get them on this show. And I told them, I was like, dude, I said to him in no uns, it had some cuss words in it, but I'm not going to say exactly what I said.
Be gentle. So,
I was like, I want to put you guys in an effing documentary or something. Like, that's how, like, fantastic these guys are.
Yeah, their sound, I mean, they sent us what, 4 songs to choose from for the closing of this show, and realistically we couldn't have gone wrong with any of the 4. I wanted to play all 4, but I got vetoed from the boss.
That'll take us over our time limit.
Yes, it will, but that's all right. No, seriously, though, check them out. Great songs. I mean, I was blown away. This is the first time I've heard them, given their regional to a different region than I'm in. But I'll be searching them out when we finish right. This show.
All their stuff's on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, all that stuff. You literally don't have an excuse.
You have no excuse. You're just slacking if you don't. That's right. Just...
We're serving this to you on a silver platter. I must have said that backwards, but go. I'm turning my head. My head's getting turned.
He's got a sideways. He's getting a. Oh man, he's upside down. He's doing a headstand.
Do it.
All right, man. Yeah. Moving on to reviews and recommendations. We had some different. We had some similar reviews this week. We had some different reviews this week. I appreciate what you tried to do. I do. I really do. Like, when you put the first one, I'm just going to jump right in. It's the first one that was on the list. It is Pup Morbid Stuff. Now, I appreciate what you were trying to do. You were trying to bring the reviews and recommendations to me. And I appreciate that. I really do. But, bruh, this album, I listened to every second of every song. Because a few weeks ago, a wise man told me that if he was going to say something negative about an album, he was going to make sure he stuck it out all the way through. Do you remember this wise man?
Yes, I do.
All right. So, this album, the music was good. The vocals, not so much. The production, I don't know where to go with this, because either the producer was a genius and was trying to hide bad vocals, or the producer was a knucklehead and it sounded like the vocals were being sang from inside of a 5-gallon bucket.
Right. So, like, let's have the conversation we had before we got on the air here.
I can't say all the words now that I said before we got on the air.
Either this producer is pulling Metallica and Justice for All and mixing out the bass from Jason Newsted because they don't need it, or they decided let's take the lead singer and instead of having him in the studio, just put a mic with him and then just have it him be six blocks away from that microphone for some reason.
Standing in the middle of the road.
Yeah, with no insulation or anything like that around to in any way capture any echoes. It just sounded like he was just like,
right. And it's, and it was like, funny, because one of the things that you said is like you couldn't understand any of the vocals, and I actually kind of went in on my notes here that I took. I kind of went in on the vocals a little bit.
Like, I couldn't understand what the hell you're saying.
Listen, you know how Howard Stern is Howard Stern. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? He gets on the radio, he says crazy stuff. There are so many people out there that get on the radio and they try to have that shock jock and it just sounds fake.
Yeah.
That's where I got with this Morbid Stuff, that some of the vocals were like, he was saying Marilyn Manson things with Fall Out Boy music. And then at one point he dropped into, like, I didn't know if he was trying to be Flogging Molly. I didn't know what was going on there. Like, that
he's trying to be Stephen Jenkins from Third Eye Blind.
I don't know.
Talking about hair, overdosing on heroin, but doing it to a happy tune.
Right. Right. My hands are in the air. Like, I knew two songs in that this was not going to be good. And nothing changed. Like, it sounded the same. The vocals sounded like he recorded everything next door.
Dude, that was my first thought. I was like, it sounds like these vocals are done next door. Or the vocals, the levels, the music was done on a 10 and the vocals were done on a 3.
Right, right. I mean, the music itself, the actual instrumental, the music itself brought this thing to a 2 for me. But that's it. 2 out of 5 is the best I could do, and that was pushing it.
And I'll be honest with you, I can't say whether the vocals are good or not, because I couldn't get it to a place where I could actually hear it in comparison with the music, because it was drowned out so much. So I gave it a 2.5, and I only went to a 2.5 because I thought that the music that was supporting it was so strong. That was the sole reason why I went there. But I don't know that this was intentional. I don't know that there is a producer out there that was like, I'm going to make you sound like hot garbage. And then it was like, or maybe he does sound like hot garbage. And he was like, ooh.
Yeah. Either this producer was a damn genius or a certified wacko. One of the two.
I don't know, but I'd be getting my money back for that studio time if it was me. One way or the other.
All right, enough mean shit stuff. Sorry. All right, moving on. You made the producer cuss, bad boy. What do you got next for me, brother?
Weyous Blood. So, you want me to talk about this one first?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I really enjoyed this album, and that's because it's kind of got a... I don't know if you would agree with me with this. It's kind of got an alt-country flair to it, a little bit.
That's not what I got from it, but go ahead.
There were songs I was picking up alt-country vibes, but...
Yeah, I guess, yeah, some of the latter songs on the album I caught. I kind of was... Go ahead and finish yours. I don't want to... Go ahead.
Okay. It was very... It had a very vintage sound. There was a couple songs that I really liked. Something to Believe, Mirror Forever, and Andromeda I enjoyed. Also, just randomly, not... I don't know, so if you don't watch this, if you don't listen to this on Spotify, you'd not be able to see it. But on the Spotify, if you're listening to on Spotify, Every Day had the little, like they have the little mini videos that they show on Spotify when you listen to songs sometimes. And Every Day had this really cool music video that was with it that accompanied the song that reminded me of an old like 1970s B-level horror movie. And it was, I don't know why that stuck out to me so much, but it just had this font going like waving and then coming up and smashing into the glass over a full moon, and it was blood red. And it was just like, it spoke B-level horror movie, something with like I loved it. And the song doesn't even at all sound like that. So I was just like, this is such a hard juxtaposition. This is like drop the transmission out of your car shift. I love it. I loved everything about that part. So kudos to them on that. But definitely for me, I enjoyed it. I think that the vocals were good. I thought that the lyrics were okay. There wasn't anything that stuck out to me as bad.
What'd you rate it?
I rated it a 4 out of 5.
Okay. You want the good or the bad?
Give me the bad first.
The bad first. All right, the bad first. Those were some long-ass songs, dude.
Dude, they were long.
Long. At like... 2 minutes, I think it was Andromeda. At 2 minutes, I looked down at the little bar that moves along the bottom as it's playing, and that thing was about a quarter of the way. Like, it maybe a little more than a quarter of the way. That was a long-ass song, dude. Long. And I would be okay with that, but for me, it just seemed the whole album moved slow. There wasn't anything up-tempo on the whole album, so the whole thing moved slow. It was very slow, methodical, plodding. Not entirely boring, but nothing got me up out of my chair. So,
no, I mean, this isn't going to be something that comes on and you're going to be like, I'm going to jump out on the dance floor. Like,
no. Hell no. Now, The good is she can sing.
Yeah.
Like, she's got a voice. She can sing really well. It just, everything moved so slow for me, it was hard to get into.
And by the way, I forgot to name the album. It's Titanic Rising is the name of the album for this one. I mean, I understand what you're saying about the slowness of it.
And that's probably more a style preference thing than anything else.
it didn't bother me because I'm into all kinds of different alt, and some of the alt I'm into is extremely a lot. Like some of the Radiohead stuff I listen to moves a hell of a lot slower than this. So,
right, and like I said, it's probably more of a preference thing than anything else. I mean, it's not like they put out hot garbage. It just it was slow for me. It was it was hard to get excited about it because of that slower tempo. I mean, every time she opened her mouth, though, great things came out. Yeah. I mean, I gave it a 3 out of 5. Nice. And the title track kind of confused me. Like, I wanted something there that wasn't there.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest with you. The title track didn't even stick out to me enough for me to remember.
It had no vocals!
Alright, up next we got the Lumineers single Gloria. Do you want to start off?
It's very Lumineers.
That is funny.
I liked it.
I wrote the exact same thing.
Yeah, I liked it. It's very Lumineers. The music kind of had a Caribbean feel to it a little bit. The words didn't necessarily match that, but it wasn't a horrible clash.
Like, how many songs are the Lumineers going to put out that's a woman's name, and then they're just going to, like, go through and sing and have, like, it's just a new Lumineers song?
Works. It's working for them. Keep doing
it. Well, and I was kind of interested because this is one of the first songs that we've really heard since Nayla Pekarik, their cellist and female vocalist, left the band. So I was kind of curious to see what it was going to be like if it missed a beat. And it didn't really, even though that's not to take away from her because she's fantastically talented. But she's pursuing a solo career now. But it didn't sound like I didn't miss her per se, you know what I mean? It still sounded just like a Lumineers track.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I enjoyed it. I gave it a 4 out of 5.
Yeah, I gave it a 3 out of 5. I just kind of thought it was pretty standard. I really liked the piano that was in it, though. They did that the kind of pickup piano in the middle parts of it. It was almost like a bridge. I really dug that because I thought that was something different. So I would probably actually adjust my rating to a 3.5 out of 5 because that's something that the Lumineers haven't really done, is something like that, at least on their hits that they've had come out, their singles. But they were just thrashing on that piano, and I absolutely dug that. I'm like, that kind of reminded me of, not in the style of Elton John, but like banging on a piano. That reminds me of Elton John, like playing the shit out of it. Right. Like, that's
what... We're full of it today, ain't we?
Right, right.
They just keep coming out. We're trying to get that explicit tag or something.
Right.
All right, last song. Cage the Elephant and Beck, Night Running. I'm going to be honest with you. I did not go into this song with high hopes, given the last Cage the Elephant song we reviewed.
Dude, it's Cage the Elephant and Beck. What could go wrong?
Bruh. Listen, I was very pleasantly surprised. I dug this song, dude. It was my highest rated song. Great bass line, good guitar. Beck did a lot of the singing. I liked the song, man. I gave it a 4.5 out of 5. Like, I was over here bobbing my head and beating my fingers on the table. I loved the song.
Yeah, I really liked it. It's super catchy. Like, love the hook. There are some horns that made their way into the song that I was like, give me the horns. I love that. The horns were fantastic. There were parts I thought it was a little repetitive, but not too bad. The horns kind of gave it a 311 feel to it for me, which isn't a bad thing. I'm not a 311 hater by any means. But it was, and I like that Beck did most of the singing. I hate when people have guests on their songs and then they just don't use the guest, or they use them very minimally. I'm like, let the guest do. Like, why?
Right. So, why even spend the time and effort to get the guest there if
Right. So they make good use of Beck in this. And I think that Beck's influence probably played a part in the rhythm of the song, because this plays like if a Beck song and a Cage the Elephant song could have a baby. Because you know what I mean? Because there's some electronic elements almost.
I laugh because I know exactly what you mean. Like you said it and it was like, oh yeah.
Right. Like, so you know that he was in there tinkering, because he is just a prolific musician. Love him or hate him, he is just a prolific musician, can play like 13 instruments or something like that. So yeah, I dug it. I gave it 3.5 out of 5, but I could be persuaded to go higher upon further listenings. I think that's one that would grow on me.
All right, moving on to feature of the week. We got a new feature for you this week. It is called My Musical Life. We will take somebody, anybody, could be a contributor from AltReview, could be one of us, who knows, could be a past musician that we've interviewed. Never know where this is going to lead us, but tonight we start with our own Nick LaTorre. Nick, are you with us? What's up, brother?
I am here. Thank you for having me. Excited to talk.
All right. My Musical Life, this is the brainchild of Mr. Michael over there, so won't you give us a little background as to what this is going to look like, and then jump right in?
Sure. So what this is My Musical Life. We just want to look at, you know, what your musical journey has looked like, and that could be what was your earliest influence in music, where you started to where you are today, and everything in between. And so I think that that's a pretty important, and seeing how music has played a role in your life, whether you're a musician, a former musician, doing what we do, any number of different things. So that's kind of where the idea came from, because music has had such a, you know, huge impact on so many people's lives. And I think it's just interesting to see, was there a shift in music taste during someone's life? If so, what did that look like, and when did it take place? So we're going to kind of get to the bottom of that. And our first subject, if you will, is Nick. So we're gonna jump right in here, Nick. And I guess I would ask is, what is the first artist or band that you remember clinging to, or who was your first musical influence? Who really stuck out to you?
Sure. So I want to start off and preface by saying that I'm really flattered that anybody would care to hear about my musical journey, but I do think this is an interesting topic and something that when I heard about it, I think that I really am going to be pumped to hear how other people's journey went. And I was a bit conflicted on how I was going to treat this, because I feel like sharing your musical interests all throughout your life can be one of those things that's a vulnerable thing, you know? Whether I be honest about it or, you know, mention all the bands that are cool for me to like. But I decided that ultimately being honest with it is huge, because as a former musician, I think that a lot of the music and stuff that I've listened to throughout my life has contributed to the work that I've done, the feel or style that I have. So I'm not ashamed of it. Long-winded response for that first part, but actually the first ones I can remember clinging to, I remember we had the Hell Freezes Over album by the Eagles, and we listened to that constantly. even from the age of 4, I was obsessed with Bon Jovi's I'll Be There For You. So the first album I ever bought was actually a cassette tape, and it was Bon Jovi's Crossroads, the compilation greatest hits type album, and because it had that song on it. Before that, there were actually some songs that I remember, and I tried to think about what was the first song I actually remember acknowledging the title of it, and I think it might have been either that Achy Breaky Heart by Billy Ray Cyrus or You Can't Touch This by MC Hammer. Those are the first that I remember, but my tastes were more at that time into like Eagles, Bon Jovi, that kind of stuff.
It's funny because, you know, having... It's no secret that we're all brothers, and like when you talk about things when you were 4, I was a little bit older, and you know, I can remember, especially when you said I'll Be There For You. I don't know if you noticed on the camera, Mike, but I kind of had to back away from the microphone and kind of chuckle a little bit, because I remember that. Like, I remember.
Yeah, it had that I had a little guitar and I would sing it all the time for everybody, and even if I didn't know the words. So that's the first song I remember like actually meaning something to me, and that's why the first album I bought was that Crossroads album. Another thing that I kind of wanted to mention is people today are so lucky about the access that we have to music now. To be able to literally look up anything you want to listen to and be able to hear it is amazing. I mean, we were really limited to what we were able to buy or had around and what, you know, shaped our original music development.
Right. Or you would wait till it came around on the radio.
Yeah. And even then it was tough because in some of the places we lived didn't have the greatest reception. So you're stuck with some stations that maybe you don't care about. Like, I knew early on that country wasn't my thing. I enjoy some of the elements of it now, but just having that being kind of pushed at me all the time, it turned me off to it pretty early.
Right. And I can remember, you know, that it kind of came up when we did our feature of the week last week, when we debated Chris Cornell's versus Sinead O'Connor's Nothing Compares to You. That Nothing Compares to You was that song for me. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I feel where you're at there, just because having put my mindset there last week for that debate.
And it's interesting.
Yeah, it's amazing how even like now, and you know, Bon Jovi is a little bit more pop and classic rock that I'm into these days, but that song will always mean something to me.
And it's interesting, Greg, that you brought up the Nothing Compares to You, because even for that, I was coming from a point of arguing for Chris Cornell, who at a very specific moment, and still to this day, was a huge influence for me as a former musician, you know, in my vocal style, what I tried to do, you know, and, you know, not necessarily saying that I sounded like Chris Cornell when I sang, but the idea of using falsetto and the idea of those sorts of things, those are things I learned from Chris Cornell and listening to Chris Cornell. And so, I was coming from the same wavelength that you were.
Cool. And even before I really understood what music was, I was really enamored by the electric guitar. So most of the music that I listened to was because there was an electric guitar in it. So that definitely guided a lot of it at the beginning. Even before I had learned how to play or anything like that, I just thought they were the coolest thing. So that's why I think I got into rock and things like that more later.
Okay, well, with that being said, let's kind of move along here. As you, the way Mike described it was adolescent years, but I would probably kind of turn that to when you first really had music at hand, when you were able to choose what music was at hand, rather than, like you were saying, you know, kind of having whatever stations were available to you. What were you gravitating to at that point?
I remember Metallica's Black Album being a huge deal. And I remember listening to that over and over again. I wouldn't say necessarily that I had the most access at that point, but I had choices and that they were who I chose to listen to. So music that sounded like them, like anything Metallica did, was what I was wanting to listen to as early as I can remember. Consistently, as far as listening to a whole album or routinely listening to it. I mean, I had that album memorized and it led me on to everything else that Metallica did from what I could find. So my musical taste around that time didn't vary by much. It was pretty much Metallica most of the time, or stuff that sounded a lot like it.
So leading with that, Nick, who stuck out to you in your teens?
In my teens, I did kind of vary a little more then. I tried thinking about the time period, and nu metal at that time was a huge deal. So Linkin Park, Korn, Power Man 5000. I still had the Steadfast, like Metallica. I was listening to Pantera, also Mudvayne. They had their first album blew up, and to me, they sounded like the heaviest thing I'd ever heard in my life. So I was immediately enamored. I was also listening to Seether, like Evanescence, a lot of the bands that people were listening to at that time. I think Seether kind of caught on more later, but I had their first album when they initially released it, and I was pretty happy with it. I haven't stayed with them too much after that, same with Evanescence, but, and I remember, Flaws album that I had at that time being a big part of what I was listening to. Orgy's Candy Ass album was something that I was listening to a lot. Green Day and 311 were also bands that I would listen to. So they were about the softest that I listened to, even though it's not all that soft, but, yeah, they were, I was still kind of into the more of the pop or alt punk scene. Cause back at that time, I don't think Green Day was much of the pop part that they are now, but still somewhat into punk at that time.
Okay. Now I think I kind of know where this is going to go, but as you moved into college and early adulthood, what were you listening to then?
So in college, the Killers released their first album. When I was a sophomore, and it blew up. So, I mean, I was listening to them all the time. Music that was popular from the 90s was making a comeback then. So we were listening to a lot of Third Eye Blind, things, bands like that from the earlier 90s alt scene. A lot of people around me are listening to Dave Matthews Band. I was never really into Dave Matthews Band, but I started getting more into some alt music and some softer things like that. I was focusing less on, I think, bands, and this is something that happened more during post-college and stuff like that, but focusing more on just trying to find songs that meant a lot rather than trying to find a band that could do what I was looking for. Or just find songs that made up whatever I was trying to get out of it. And I hadn't really used music is therapy much throughout my life, but I remember in college it started being a big part of it. Just how having to deal with the stresses and things like that. It was huge.
And what about post college?
So that was around the time that, I mean, during college, we had the band going toward the end for me. I mean, it was mostly more in college for the rest of the bandmates, but so we had the band going, so I was trying to get as many different influences as I could, listening to everything I could. And actually, you know, I'm sorry, I gotta go back, because I completely left out a whole area of stuff that I forgot to mention, and this is gonna mean some now. During the teen years, too, and actually as early as 12, I started getting into rap and hip-hop, but mostly, like, rap, Snoop Dogg, Bone Thugs and Harmony, stuff like that. I heard Tupac for the first time before that from my cousin when I was 11, but at the time he didn't do a whole lot for me, but I started really getting into hip hop and stuff like that when I was around 12. And I think that it's had an impact on how the types of music that I write and the type of music that I think people should listen to draw influences and things like that. So, since then I've always listened to some rap and hip hop and things like that too. And around that time, I was trying to somewhat fuse the two in a way that some other bands were doing it. But that was just kind of my interest at the time. Third Eye Blind was, for post-college, though, was definitely what I was listening to most of the time. I started listening to some reggae and things like that just because I had a friend who was into reggae. And not like old style, woom-chaka, but, you know, like more modern reggae with a little bit of funk type of modern bands. And I would get into stuff like that and still kind of listen to some of that stuff today.
Okay. And kind of moving into, you know, playing off of that, if I were to open your playlist right now, what am I seeing?
You see a lot from Father John Misty. You'd see a lot from the acts that I've been writing about, Moob Robot, Observer Drift. They're both on my playlist and getting a lot of play right now. I've also been listening to Jeremy Zucker, just Illenium, a lot of different things like that. But a lot of Father John Misty. I feel bad for being kind of a holdout for him, but after listening to some songs that Michael introduced me to, I really appreciate his style of writing and his wit. So my go-to, I think, if I'm picking a band to listen to music from all of them, it's going to be from Father John Misty.
Cool. Yeah, he's got a way of doing that.
Yeah.
Like, if you would have told me when we first started this podcast that, A, I was even going to be reviewing music, and B, I would be talking about Sigrid like the second coming, I would have told you you're a daggone liar, but here I am.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, and I try to write about bands that I actually do enjoy myself. So I'm not saying I fully vet every song from these artists when I get them, but I do listen to enough that I get a feel for what they're about. And if I don't enjoy it, like, I'm honestly not going to put it in my column. That's why most of my reviews kind of sway more toward the better side, because I'm like, why do you need me to tell you about bad music? It's, you know, my review segment, I guess, is a little different. We're not trying to keep you up to date on everything everybody's doing. I'm focusing specifically on electronic music. And I think that a lot of people, if they do like that, they don't have particular artists that they like, or they have music that they've listened to their whole life from that genre, but they're not keeping up or learning about any of the new ones. So I try to listen to as many of those as I can. And honestly, it really, they start to, you know, grow on me hard, and some of them even more so after I wrote the article. I almost feel like doing a follow-up sometimes and saying, like, you know, when I said all these great things about them before, well, listen now.
I like it. I like it. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a different animal, the way that things have changed here with the podcast. How, you know, all I really did before was give Michael and Frankie a platform to speak. I, you know, I can record it, I can amplify it, I can edit it. And so, you know, podcast was smooth sailing. Now it's not, don't get me wrong, it's not in any way bad. It's just, it's different. Like, you wouldn't have been able to tell me back in October that I would be, by April, reviewing music. I would have thought you were crazy. I mean, I hope he's not playing it at getting me to write articles, too, because that is never, ever going to happen.
I could edit them for you and everything. Like, it could work out really well.
Negative ghostwriter.
Yeah, so you're talking to the managing editor. I'm going to convince you, too.
I'll keep my promise on that one.
But one thing that I actually think, I think is great about our reviews is that we don't do them because we have to. We do them because it's the type of music we actually enjoy. And no matter what, I think if you listen to read one of our reviews, you're going to see something that's, you're going to find some good in it. Like, we'll find a way to talk about the good things. So, when you talk about doing that, even if you don't feel like an expert when you immediately walk into the situation, nobody knows better than you how that music affects you. So, glad to see that you felt that you could take that angle now.
Even the stuff that we give a 2 out of 5, like we did earlier tonight, we give a fair shake to and talk about what's good about it. We say, like, oh, the music in this is great. The vocals sound like they were mixed by someone who's never mixed before, but yeah. You know, but it is what it is.
That's why I try to guide mine a little differently. Cause I know there are people out there that know a lot more about the genre than I do, but I just know how someone who could look at that and maybe wasn't the biggest fan of that type of music and what things they might enjoy or that would be kind of a cross, you know, from other types of music that they might enjoy. Like, I would like to push more instrumentals in my reviews, but sometimes I worry that people aren't going to be into them the way I am. So, it does affect it a little bit, but
I think in the electronic genre, you get a little bit more forgiveness on that than you would in other alt genres.
Absolutely. That's why I've been trying to focus on ones that do have some tracks that still have vocals in them. That way, I can throw in the ones with the vocals with the great instrumentals.
Awesome. All right, gentlemen. Well, that is all the time we have for this segment for the evening. We got to get moving on here. We're getting close to being up against it on time. So, Nicholas, thank you so much for being a part of the very first My Musical Life feature of the week here on the Alt Review Podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. As I said, I appreciate that anybody would be interested in that, but I am looking forward to hearing others too. So looking forward to this segment.
Awesome. We will keep you posted.
Thanks, Nick.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good night, brother.
You too.
All right. There you go, ladies and gentlemen, the debut of my musical life here on the Alt Review podcast. Feature of the week. That was Nick LaTorre, Alt Review's own Nick LaTorre, with his musical life. Now,
can I just say one thing?
Go for it.
I got him to find the light with Father John Misty. Yeah.
You're a trip.
It's my man.
Listen, you've turned my head with a few, especially now that I'm reviewing them. Like, before, it was so easy to just sit here and mark off, okay, Michael did his, Frankie did hers, Michael did his, Frankie did hers. And it's not that simple anymore. Like, I have to put thought into these reviews. And I do. I think, you know, you've kind of helped me with that, too. You know, and A, I've heard, you know, some songs that I probably never would have been introduced to. You know, a perfect example was the song we closed with last week, Collateral Damage by Talker. Let's be honest, would I have ever found that song if not for this podcast?
Right.
Probably not. But that, in my opinion, was a great song.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's been an eye-opener for me. And I think I've kind of taken a little bit from reading the reviews that you guys put out, and, you know, like Nick said, nobody knows how that music affected me like me, and I kind of keep all that in mind. Quit trying to go out there and be a master music critic and just tell how the music affected me.
Right, right.
All right, brother, well, moving on, we got to highlight the site. Tonight, I have Film Schooled by Mr. Ty Buchanan. Man, this is a great... Having been film and radio are where my higher education lie. And this article right here blends them, and I love it. Like, I think this is a great article. The most recent one Ty put out was Lenny Kravitz again, discussing the music video, and, you know, you gotta check it out. It's, you know, he explains a lot, you know, a lot of the behind the scenes things that you're not necessarily thinking about when you're watching a music video. So go check that out from Ty on www.altreview.com. What are you highlighting, sir?
So we're doing the couple thing here, because I'm highlighting Frankie's, they happen to be dating, so...
What?
What? Where's blue people's mind? So I'm highlighting Frankie's article that was her concert review of the Stella Donnelly show. And I'm not going to lie, just reading through it, it was just pure, like, unadulterated joy of just her going... It was just so much fun for her, just going to this show. She's talking about how... Stella Donnelly was telling stories between the songs and was making people laugh. Particularly there was a part about, she didn't want her mom to find out that this one song was about like a sex toy or something like that. And she's like, well, sorry, Mom.
Let that one out. My bad.
Right. So like, it was just a lot, and it was really funny. And Frankie had the opportunity to meet her at the merch table, because Stella Donnelly worked her own merch table, which I was like, props to you, because she's at that point where she's big enough to not have to do that. And that was kind of cool. And she got her vinyl autographed. So, of course, she bought a vinyl while she was there, and she got it autographed by Stella Donnelly. So awesome. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, and I know she was amped about that show for a long time.
Right. She was ready to go when she got those tickets. So I'm glad that she got to go and had such a fun experience. So that was pretty cool. And it was kind of like a closing of a journey, if you will, because we knew when she got, or even before she got the tickets, remember? Because we did the tour announcement on the show.
Right.
And she was like, and I had texted her earlier in the day that day, telling her that she was going to be at Ace of Cups. And she was like, oh, I'm so going.
Like, yeah, that's awesome. And she was amped about it. And I'm glad she got to go and put out a great review. So good on you, Francie Pants.
Yeah.
Now when she sees me at the Mammoth show in a couple weeks, or in a couple weeks, she's going to kill me for calling her that. But is what it is. All right, my man. Already we are up against it. Ladies and gentlemen, you have got to stay tuned after we shut our big fat mouths. Lion Throne, Snake Charmer, don't miss this tune. With that being said, I am GP from Corpus Christi for Michael LaTorre. Be good or be good at it. We are out.
All things out. Always.
my choice. His life was.